You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 130, Kubo and the Two Strings. Who's the monkey?
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling, and if you are watching me live on YouTube or watching in the archive in YouTube, you're probably wondering why I'm just a giant flashing R. It's because my computer today does not recognize that I have a camera built into my computer. So, moving on, let's talk about my other two co-hosts, Chelsea Robson and Mason Smith. Say hello, guys.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I'm in the dark of night here in my room. It's extra spoopy in here.
I'm in Brazil. Hey!
Chelsea's in Brazil.
I am. I am reporting from Sao Paulo.
Wow.
It's been good times.
What does Sao Paulo mean in Brazilian? Portuguese.
Saint Paul.
Okay, well.
Not Saint Sal, but yeah, basically it's referring to Saint Paul.
Well, all right.
Good times.
Yes. So Mason off air was mentioning that he had a bet that Chelsea was going to be kidnapped. And so far, she has not.
Don't say that.
She has not. And we are very happy, especially because we have video reference of you. We know this isn't just some Chelsea impersonator. It is the real deal Chelsea live in Brazil.
The real deal.
And it's much later in Brazil right now. It's 10 o'clock. We're recording this, you know, late afternoon, early evening. So we appreciate Chelsea taking the time to sacrifice and talk about a very fantastic movie, in my own opinion, Kubo and the Two Strings,
ooh,
which is going to be our main focus film today. I'm very excited to talk about it.
El Kubo, man. Yeah, that's right. Animation Addicts Podcast, where we sit down like three nerdy animation-loving friends and talk about what we love about animation. So this is your first time listening. Welcome. If you're a recurring listener, welcome back.
Hey.
And of course, all this awesome video gadgetry is brought to you by our wonderful patrons. You should totally check out how to be a patron subscriber at rotoscopers.com/patron.
It's a good deal.
Excellent plug.
It is a great deal.
So let's jump into talking about our main discussion, which is the newly released Laika film, Kubo and the Two Strings. So, of course, spoiler alert, if you have not seen the film yet, you might want to exit here, because we will absolutely be spoiling the film, talking about the ins, the outs, everything about this film. So I highly recommend seeing this film, coming back and pushing play on the podcast again, because it's just too good not to miss out on.
This film actually does not come out until October in Brazil, so...
Whoa!
We are really jumping the gun.
So you haven't even seen it?
I've seen it. No, We were able to see the pre-screening. It was like the night before I left, so...
Oh, you Arizona folk get so lucky. I've only been to one advanced screening, and that was for Brave, and we had to go to like the most ghetto movie theater in Austin to do it. But it was free.
You sacrificed.
Since then, I have graciously turned down Morgan's offers for advanced tickets in Texas so that I can watch the movie with the common folk. And do you know what happened when I saw? Do you know what happened when I saw Kubo and the Two Strings yesterday?
Tell us. I'm sure it's an amazing because Mason always has the best experiences at the theater.
Do you guys, for those of you who watch the podcast, I get very excited and very passionate about my theater experience. I am a hardworking, free-thinking American, and I have a constitutional right to enjoy my movie when I go to the theater. And so I frequently tell these horror stories about people who were disturbed, disturbing everyone in the theater, or crying babies who shouldn't be there in the first place. or some guy who laughs at all the jokes like he's on ecstasy. I did not have a single problem. It was the perfect screening. It was 1:50 p.m. In the afternoon, and I had absolutely no problems. It was the most pleasant movie experience in my life. You know why?
Nice.
Because I was the only person in the theater.
That is both good yet bad.
Yeah.
It's not. I was a little creeped out, actually.
I've seen movies where it's like I was the only one in the theater, and it really did kind of creep me out. I was just like, I feel like I shouldn't be here. But
do you guys
great.
Realize that I lucked out because I basically bought out the theater without knowing I had actually bought it out?
Had a private screening.
It I had true. A my own private screening.
Was Shannon with you?
I didn't even sign up for it. No, she was at work. The only time I could do it, we got back from vacation Saturday. I don't go out and see movies on Sunday. I had to do stuff on Monday, and so yesterday was the only day I could do it because today I worked. And so there were only three 2D screenings in my town, which is really weird because I would think that they would. I don't know. I guess it's competing with a lot of other films, like a bunch of new films probably came out while we were on vacation and kind of bumped it out. But yeah, only three screenings available for the entire day, so I had to go to the one in the middle of the day. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So you saw it in 2D then?
I saw it in 2D. I don't like to see 3D films because I'm not a loser. I'm just kidding. Because they give me a headache, really. They kind of disorient me. And Shannon doesn't like them either, so I tend to go to the 2D screen.
Yeah, so I have a choice. Okay. I go regular, but we saw this in 3D, and I didn't think it really added much at all.
I didn't
Which
think
it never,
there were
it never
a lot of
does,
like,
it seems. It's just such a gimmick to get in a few extra bucks.
Right. It could either be like, we're not trying to make this 3D. Like, you can watch it in 3D if you want. Or it could be like, see it in 3D because we have stuff flying at the camera, you know? And in which case, the gimmicks kind of detract from the entire experience. But anyway, QED, it was the greatest movie experience I had. The only thing that would make it better if I had my darling Shanna by my side. So it was just about perfect. Because I was the only person there.
Well, good.
Well, this kind of leads in empty theaters. Let's talk about how this film has done the box office and whatnot. So, but before we get to that, let's just talk about some general statistics about the film. So, obviously, we have Kubo and the Two Strings. The studio is Laika, which is based in Oregon. This is their fourth film that they have done so far, their fourth feature film. Directors are Travis Knight, who is the president and CEO. This is, I believe, the first film that he has actually directed. All the other films, he had other directors. And I was listening to an interview that he did with the Bancroft brothers, and it was a fantastic interview, so I will link that in the show notes. But he was just talking about he was kind of waiting for a film that really spoke to him and he could really, you know, feel confident in directing. And I think he did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Release date in the United States was August 19th, 2016. So it's been about 2 weeks since it was released. And the budget is $60 million. So a little lower than what we're used to for, you know, films released nowadays. Domestically, unfortunately, it has only made $26.5 million to date, which is not necessarily the best. That's just domestic. As far as foreign releases, it has $2.7 million internationally, putting the worldwide total at $29.2 million, which I am just, to be honest, shocked to see such a low box office grossing for this. I was very disappointed that, opening weekend, it didn't even break the top three. And it just hasn't resonated with audiences, which makes me so sad because I went into this and I was thinking, meh, I don't know. I'm not too pumped, but I'm optimistic because it's Laika. And this, I think, is one of my favorite Laika films to date.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's my favorite, hands down.
For sure.
Oh, I don't know. Coraline's tough to beat. Yeah, I think it's better than Coraline, actually.
To me, this felt very much like a traditional fairy tale, where it was something that you could almost read in a children's book or chapter book, or just kind of the traditional fairy tales that we grew up knowing, like whether it's the European fairy tales or some of these these more Asian fairy tales. It just felt like this could have been a story that had been told for a long time, eons. But so let's just start off. Why do you think it hasn't resonated with audiences yet?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Because they're lame.
Because they are lame. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, as mentioned before, it has not been released in a lot of countries. So as far as the international statistics, it's a very low number just because it hasn't been released in a lot of places.
Well, but been released in Australia, Hong Kong, Israel, Malaysia, Netherlands, New Zealand, Peru, South Africa, Spain, Taiwan, Ukraine, and Vietnam.
Okay.
All doing less than $1 million. Well, and those were all released on the 28th, which was just a few days ago. So,
yeah.
There you go.
I don't know, man. Do you think it's been mismarketed? Because I know it kind of had a transition from Kubo and the Two Strings to Kubo.
Yes.
You know, everyone loves Kubo. And then it's so cliche how they do this in movie trailers where they say the name of the main character. And they'll do a montage of characters saying the name of the character in the film. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Kubo, Kubo, Kubo.
They did it for Shrek. Yeah, they did it. Kubo, Kubo, Kubo.
Yeah. You know?
They did it with Shrek. They did it with Kubo. But yeah, I've seen that they do that. And they switched the imagery from Kubo with the guitar to Kubo with the sword. And actually, there are movie posters that show Kubo with the sword unbreakable and monkey with the sword unbreakable also.
Oh.
So it's like it's like a disconnect. So like swords everywhere. We got to have swords.
Yeah.
No, no kids are going to want to watch a show about a kid who fights with a guitar.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I did notice that too, that in the trailers, they had just shortened it to Kubo, but the film, its official title was never shortened. It was just in the advertising. They didn't really want to get into the whole, and the two strings. It was just, Kubo's cooler. It's easier. Yeah. It's shorter. Let's just keep the attention span. Yeah. And I thought the marketing for the most part was pretty good. I thought that especially shortening it to just Kubo, I mean, I noticed because I paid attention to that. But I think I couldn't see anything wrong with the trailers. And so does this bring up the basically discussion that stop motion just doesn't resonate with audiences anymore? Because a week prior to this was the release of Sausage Party, which is the Seth Rogen R-rated comedy, which completely took the world by storm and actually has done quite well.
It's done really
compared
well.
To this. So let's see, as of...
Well, it's just getting... I mean, you know, it's just getting the Seth Rogen crowd.
Yes, but
like
it is...
He's got his own. He's got a fan base, you know.
Yeah, totally. So, Sausage Party has been out a few weeks, and it's at $90.6 million, according to Box Office Mojo. Significantly better, basically almost four times what Kubo has done, just with having an extra week in there, obviously. But yeah, it's funny because you know you would look at a film like Sausage Party and think, "Oh, wow, there's a very limited audience for that." But then again, maybe not. I was interested to see how Sausage Party would fare with people who normally wouldn't go see animation, and apparently they liked it quite well. And then we hear on the other side we have Kubo and the Two Strings, which you know is I think a bit more of a more of a broad story. I feel that it appealed to more people than some animated films that are released. Let's say Norm of the North or some of these ones that come off as very kiddie. Even, you know, The Secret Life of Pets. But right. I just feel that there still is some sort of stereotype with animation, and we do see occasional films break it, you know, obviously the big names, but do you think it's a stop motion thing, or is it more just advertising, the story? What is it?
Man, I really enjoy this film. Like, as an animation, as a lover of animation, as an animation addict, right? I really enjoyed the film, and I would rate it pretty highly. I don't know, man. This summer, we've had a lot of more flashy animated films. I think people have gathered to Sausage Party. They've gathered around the sausage like they gathered around Shrek. They wanted to see something that broke the status quo. And while raunchy R-rated animated films aren't exactly unheard of anymore, the fact that it got the Seth Rogen stamp, you know, it broke into mainstream comedy, was probably refreshing to people. And maybe, unfortunately, it competed with Kubo, and Kubo lost. My personal feelings on it is that I don't really care that Kubo is apparently not that popular with audiences, as long as Laika can still make enough money to keep doing movies. Because as I understand it, Travis Knight and the rest of the crew at Kubo are wanting to eventually transition into a yearly release schedule for their films, according to some interviews.
Yep.
In fact, they're already working on their next release. They have been for a little while, apparently. And so I really hope that they can keep up that schedule. And for that reason, I do want Kubo to succeed, but I don't need, for something that I feel really passionate about, that I love a lot, I don't need to feel validated by having a lot of people like it too. But I do worry about the company.
If they are wanting to stick to, or to begin doing a yearly release schedule, their films have to produce the revenue and the profits to make these endeavors worth it. And so that's basically what comes down to it. It's a film that's so good, and I hate to see it do so poorly, because that means that the future of these innovative films that tend to come from Laika, or that have come from Laika, are hanging in the balance, it seems. So hopefully, you know, Chelsea, your Brazilian fellows will, you know, come to this in droves. Yeah. You know, obviously there's still a big Asian market, which has not been released to either. There was a few countries in that area, but not, you know, China or Japan, had not been released yet. So let's give some time. But in the meantime, let's dive into the film and talk about what we thought about it. So I think we are all generally positive based on our first thoughts and kind of how the conversation has gone.
One thing I did want to add before we move on is just the fact that another thing to add to the mix is Laika is still a public company, which also gives the right and the direction to be able to make such innovative and just different films, as opposed to moving over to more of the mainstream, predictable type. I saw a little bit earlier on in the comments how that tends to be something that ends up, you know, people who go to the movies, they, especially parents, they want to know what they're getting into, and they want to know that their money is going to be worth it. And so for somebody going in, they may have thought, oh, is this going to be an artsy type film? I don't know. I just know that from every little bit that I ever saw of this on the trailers, I was just in awe. And it's been one of my favorite upcoming films since I first saw that trailer. So for me, it is really sad that people haven't gone and given and really seen this movie, because there's so much to say.
Well, one thing that you can say to just kind of start off a general discussion is that I think this could be the most ambitious stop motion film ever. Even more than The Little Prince, I think, just because of the sheer scope and the technical steps that they took. And let's clear the air with something real quick, is that Laika does not want to be a purist stop motion studio.
No.
I believe they will continue to be doing stop motion, but one of the most defining and awesome parts of this that I enjoyed from watching this film was the extensive and seamless blending of stop motion and CG. So I had a buddy, his name is Chow. Chow was in my grad program, and he recently got a job as a CG rigger at Laika last year. When I heard about it, when he announced it on Facebook, I was like, yeah, right, faking it. There's no CG at Laika. But lo and behold, he is. Like I said, Laika doesn't want to be a pure stop motion studio. They blended CG environments, CG compositing, and CG characters, like background characters and crowd characters, with the main hero characters who were in stop motion. I am 90% certain that they're like large crowds and their background characters were CG. If you just like watch them, you know? And I've read a bunch of articles and making of stuff like that where they use a lot of green screening and stuff like that. They tried to do practical effects for the water in the lake sequence, and it just didn't work. So they went with a digital effect. And you know what? I think it's a great idea. Like, you got to remember, these are not tiny little models. These are like full-blown, like 6 to 12-inch maquettes. Very technical. Even they build robot systems. Yeah. And we'll get to that. And these movies aren't getting any cheaper, and so why not add some CG? Because the fidelity and the trueness to material that you can achieve in with digital effects can really add to your film and add to the scope. And what we see is that this film is just epic. It's literally a samurai epic, and that's mm-hmm. what they wanted from the beginning, right? Yes. I think it was an artist on Coraline who conceived this idea of this sweeping, dramatic, Japanese samurai epic. And what we've ended up with was brilliant scale in scope. Like, we've got 66,000 3D printed faces. I think they said that combined there were several million facial expressions that they were throwing around, you know, and oftentimes they would switch in a head or a facial expression for every frame in a second, which is 24 frames. You know, and, search up the pencil tests that they did to block out the animation. Like, some people actually went in and 2D animated some of these characters. And then Chelsea mentioned the giant skeleton dude. I read 16, sometimes I read 18, but he's like very large. Tall. I think he's the largest model that they've built for their films.
Yeah.
You know?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Well, and also, this is the longest stop-motion film ever. Coraline had the record prior, but this one beat it out by 1 whole minute of footage. So,
wow, 1 whole minute.
Which is a lot.
And then they had the whole closing credits, which were 2D animated. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. But yeah, I think... Like, it depends on which article you read, but sometimes it says they got away with producing 2 full seconds of animation a week. Others are like, some other articles say close to like 4 mm-hmm. Seconds of film created every week. And God, what a production schedule. Like, such hard work. Much, much length. Such long. Wow.
Such long. Such long.
Yeah, I've been watching long. Some behind the scenes videos of this, and if you stayed to the end credits, you obviously got to see a little taste, as Leica always does in their films. And just again, I say this every single time, I am so blown away by this process of stop motion, and really, really admire and look up to the artists who, you know, have to think of everything, and not only, you know, think and model and move everything that's on in the scene, but also make sure to get it right and don't mess up, because that's a lot of work to go back and mm-hmm. redo, you know, when, you know, in CG or even 2D, and you can maybe just, you know, tweak this one little part. But I mean, if you mess up a scene, you mess up the whole scene. You can't just go back and fix the one character, but perhaps you can. But it's very intricate, like, and I love it. So
yeah I thought it was brilliant. And what's interesting is that if you contrast this with Coraline, like, their stop motion animation is getting more and more advanced and mm-hmm. fluid. Like I said, they've got all sorts of technical physical rigs, you know, like robots, armatures, etc., that they use to move the characters. I saw a demo of an artist working with the cape of one of the sisters, and it had this very it had some sort of wire or some sort of structure underneath to where she could just bend it and it would hold that position. Really cool. And it just blows my mind how they did stuff like the cape and Kubo's hair, like the super subtle movement and the fur on Monkey, which I understand was Laika's first like fully full fur character, if you will. Mm-hmm. All the leaves and all the paper swirling around and stuff. And you see that they have these little poles, you know, that hold the little poles, you know, that hold the thing out, and then I guess they just comp that out and stuff like that. And I don't even know, man. But what's funny is that I read one review that actually complained at how advanced the animation is. That they said that they were yearning for that old magic, that not seamless, the opposite of seamless, that kind of clunky, imperfect effect.
Thumbprints on the face.
yeah, like the Wallace and Gromit kind of thing, you know, and stuff like that. And they were really pining for that. And they said that Kubo lost the magic of stop motion because it got so advanced.
I don't think so.
I don't really believe that because I did see the imperfections and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's there. It's like the very subtle imperfections of a 2D, like a hand-drawn film, maybe something from the Xerox era at Disney.
Mm-hmm. It's a
silly complaint. We've got Finn68 on YouTube chat chiming in with that. It is a silly complaint, but it also brings up, like, at what point is Laika going to, like, do you think Laika's ever going to be like, okay, why don't we just make a really good-looking CG film? You know, do you think it'll ever get to that point, or do you think they'll stay on their route? Because even the director admitted that it's kind of ludicrous to go the stop motion route with such an ambitious concept.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to another interview with him, and he mentioned that, you know, like you said, they don't necessarily only want to do stop motion. So I do see a day when, like, he even talked about 2D could be in their future. I mean, they really just want to use the best medium to tell their story. Traditionally, that has been stop motion. It's kind of what they've become known for, but they're kind of wanting to branch out, which I think will be interesting because we've heard that from Disney that, oh, we don't give direction as whether this should be a CGI or a traditional film. We let the directors choose. Yet, ever since Winnie the Pooh was released, they're all CGI. So, and that's because their studio is set up as a CGI pipeline. So I find it a little hard to believe that suddenly they'd be like, no, we're 100% 2D. Let's bring back the drawing tables. So I like hearing that Laika is open to exploring other things. But then again, I mean, they just do this so well. I want them to continue with stop motion and keep refining and just being very, what's the term? Basically pioneering in what stop motion can do when combined with technology.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was kind of thinking about how we could structure this episode, and I noticed that the film, it's kind of like an Odyssey type setup where the hero and his partner, they go to a sequence of places trying to find some things, and they meet some people. And so I thought maybe we could go by the characters, because the characters are very interesting in this film.
Let's do it.
You start off with the mom, who's this fascinating animated character.
Yes.
Like, that opening sequence is like... I'm just kidding. And then when she hits the guitar, it's like... And the sea parts, and it's like, let my people go. I'm just kidding. I'm getting into a Prince of Egypt there. Different continent. But... she's so strange in the beginning because she hits her head. Spoiler alert, by the way. You need to go see this film before you partake of this podcast episode. And she hits her head on the ocean, you know, and stuff. And so she gets the scar and the baby survives. And so I didn't quite understand her situation in the first act of the film. Like, is she like suffering from dementia or like brain damage? Is that what I'm supposed to kind of get out of it?
That's what I would assume.
Is there a curse on her? Like, why is she only, like, lucid or active during the night? Did y'all figure that out?
I agree. It was never clear, and you kind of, by the time... I was very confused initially, trying to figure out what her situation was, and by the time you know, I wanted to look into it more. We just kind of moved on. You know, she did come to her senses, her normal self at the that scene where she has to rescue Kubo. Thank goodness.
Cubone. Cubone. He lost his mom. It's perfect.
It does. Oh, it's meant to be.
It's perfect.
She is a Kangaskhan, and he is the little baby Kangaskhan. Oh, so he puts the skull on the head and turned into
Cubone. That theory, though.
I love that theory.
As a Gen 1-er, I appreciate
Anyways,
that
Anyways, we will go away from this Pokemon tangent. You can join us for our other podcast, which is Poke Stories with Mason and Morgan.
Poke Stories with Mason and Morgan. Mason's conquest of Generation 1.
But I agree. I did not understand really what had happened there. I would have liked to have a little bit more clarification. But nonetheless, she just wasn't all there. Let's just put it at that.
Well, she also, later on, you realize that she's one of these night creatures. So mm-hmm. all of her sisters can't come out during the day. And so that's one of the reasons why she's not really all there during the day. That's what I got out of it. As far as she comes alive at night, as far as like her memory and more about her. Like, so her spirit is more alive at night when that's kind of what happens with her sisters. Her sisters don't come out right. until the moon is out. And that's one of the main reasons why she was like, don't ever go out into the moonlight. Because that's
they're
when
gonna find
they'll
you.
Find you.
Hide your Kubo, hide your monkey, and hide your mom. Because they're kidnapping
hide
everyone.
Your eyes.
I like the way that this was set up. Because it really put us in a situation where we... you know, Kubo was very mature for his age. And he had to go out and basically mm-hmm. make money for the family. And use his talents and perform. And take care of his mom
why
to an extent.
They,
and it really showed
character
development
for him. Why can't they live
in
a normal house?
What?
Why can't they live in a normal house? Why do they have to live in a cave?
Because it's so much cooler to live in Pride Rock above everyone else than in the
Pride
dingy
Rock.
Village.
I love it. Dingy village.
Well, and also, like, he only gets paid so much, and he's the one that's taking care of them. He can't afford to get a house.
Seriously. Interest rates these days? Forget about
Seriously.
It.
Seriously. Mm-mm.
Actually, yeah. they're quite yeah. low today. So, back so then.
Right off the bat, I like Kubo. I think he's a cool protagonist for an animated film. Missing one parent, so check that off the list for
animation
mandatory attribute. Yeah, animation tropes. I like he's kind of funny. Like, he's kind of a jokester,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I will admit, he's one of those animated characters that does not seem to have any flaws, and so you kind of miss out on that plot point. You know how they do that? Kind of like the Aladdin thing. Like, he's a great guy, but he told too many lies, you know? But it's still refreshing that there was no "you lied to me" moment. So he's definitely a different character. Do I like him more than Norman from Paranorman? I don't know. It's hard to say. But he's got the coolest guitar ever. It makes origami things magic.
Seriously, like, his storytelling was so cool. I just thought that was fantastic. Moving around was just, every moment I just thought, oh my gosh, somebody did that.
I loved all the Japanese elements of this story. Obviously, origami played a part, but even the look and feel was designed after famous Japanese woodblock prints. Specifically, there's a very famous one called the Great Wave of Kanagawa, where it's basically, when you think of Japan, you think of this wave, right? And in that very initial scene with the mom, they wanted that to mirror that famous woodblock print. But I really love the design of this film, and I know we're not really talking about that, but the origami sparked it. I just like the very traditional elements that they included to kind of make this feel very native and real.
Well, they do kind of go into that. It goes into that papermation mm-hmm. realm, mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. like what they do with Little Prince. And so I thought that was pretty cool. Now, I do not know why Kubo's guitar is magic. I don't remember why he has that guitar in the first place. His mom had it, and she had the pick of destiny. that kind of did the thing, and
well,
did the thing with the wave. Your guitar does that whoosh thing.
I think she, like, this is basically how I explained it all in my head. She's magic, and she can endow certain things with magic. And so that's how
like his wings, like his robe.
Like his robe, yes. Like, so she took different parts of her magic and endowed it into these objects so that he could have it as opposed to not having it later. So that's what I got out of that. And then, yeah, later on with the two strings, it's like even more magic because it's a memories of her and memories of them together. Like the dad and the mom.
Oh, that's what the two strings are.
You didn't know that?
I was gonna bring this up later, but I got to the end of the film and I was like, what are the two strings exactly? Like, there was supposed to be two strings I was supposed to be looking for?
There were three strings.
They were the bracelet?
There were three strings initially, yes. And so then, so the whole time I was sitting here, I'm like, this movie is called Kubo and the Two Strings. Why are there three? You know, and so that kind of gets that you thinking in the back of your head. And then the bracelets, you know, the hair of the mom and then the dad, he uses those bracelets or, you know, to become the new strings on his guitar. So it, like, even more power because it's family.
Family power. It's like Scott Pilgrim where he uses the power of love and then uses the power of self-respect, and it's pretty good. The power of family, the power within. I like it. So
good times.
I love a good animated film where they're like, here is the world that you live in. Here are the rules of the world that you live in. Don't ever break them. And what happens 5 minutes later? Oh, I'm late. I'm never going to get home by sundown. And then what happens? Kubo. Oh my gosh. The sisters, voiced by Rooney Mara. I have no idea who she is, but she did awesome. Are these chicks awesome or what?
They were one of the best characters.
As soon as I saw them in the previews, I was hooked. Like, they're so spooky and so cool. Like, they fit that kind of Japanese trope of, like, the ghost witch lady.
Yeah.
It's like they perfectly combine Japanese ghosts with Western witches, you know, that.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're down to the hat.
Their design is amazing because they have these almost kabuki-like mask faces. And so when they're talking, their lips don't move because of this mask or whatever it ends up being. And it's just so creepy in how they are designed that it's perfect.
I loved it. It's classic Laika, you know? They can turn on the creep factor if they want. And I was just so impressed by these characters. I loved their fighting style. I loved their attitudes. I love simple characters. I like that these characters are just so mean and nasty, you know?
Yes.
And just great designs. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
I mean, I could see them being, like, villains in an anime or, like, villains in, like, a Final Fantasy game, you know? Something like that. Just such style.
They kind of reminded me of Zelda, Kuum and Kotek from the Ocarina of Time, except for they're kind of old in the game, but it's the fact
they're
that there are two witches. Yes, was very nice.
That's right, sister. I love it.
Oh, very awesome. Okay, so then, you know, the mother comes, saves him with her last breath. He had been given this talisman of this wood carving of a monkey.
Mr. Monkey,
of course. We must get that right. And then, you know, scene cut. He's in this new area. He's alone. And there is a live monkey who, let's just jump to the chase, is his mom. We come to find out.
Okay. Can I just say that I was thoroughly confused with the parent thing? If the monkey was the protector the whole time, then why can you have the mom and the monkey in the same universe?
No, so
poof,
the talisman.
The mom went into the monkey?
So the monkey statue was never anything. It was just,
help me figure this
just
out.
A
it was
carving,
just a
statue. And with her last breath, she kind of put herself into the monkey talisman and turned it to life for a time being. That's how I understood it.
Yeah?
That's how I understood it, too.
All right. Well, maybe I'm overcomplicating it, but the mom flew into the monkey at the last second and then popped out and was the monkey.
Yes.
Okay. But when she got killed by the sister, spoiler alert, she turned back into the monkey and the monkey was broken.
Well, no, because her spirit left the monkey
was
and the monkey
the broken
was just the monkey.
Who Who's the monkey? The monkey's his uncle? All right. All right. I guess I can do that. So going back to Charlize Theron, she does a great job. She channeled a lot of Furiosa from Mad Max in this role. And I don't know. That's probably why they cast her. Cause she, you know, she was, a bad A in Mad Max and she's one in this film. I love Monkey straight off the bat because she is the exact opposite of Kubo. She is mature. She's protective. She doesn't take risks. Her one job is to protect Kubo and stop him from getting killed. And she's a formidable fighter. I just love it. I'm thinking of something
the
like
mom's
Bagheera.
Character. Bagheera.
Bagheera. Bagheera.
I feel like her character was so intense because even from the very beginning, one, you're bringing in so many different themes with her character and they don't explain a lot, which makes you need to pay more attention.
Yeah,
to everything.
She's not interested in talking.
Right.
You get three.
Well, yeah, she's got this head injury, which also like makes you feel like, okay, yes, Kubo really does have to grow up really quickly because he's now the guy and he's the one in charge and he's the one making sure that their family is going to live another day, basically. And then with her, like, you get a lot of this, there's just so much that comes through that because you just have, I mean, I have had, like, my grandparents are 99 years old now and they're starting to lose some of the memories and everything. And so it is really hard to look at like a loved one that not too long ago knew you and knew what was going on, but now it doesn't. And so you have a lot of that going on in there. And then like, she'll come back to life and then you just see like this hope for this faith, like that it can come back and we can still have a good family again, or a good, you know, something.
Yeah, things will be okay. Yeah, or back to normal.
Yeah, things will be okay. So there's just so much emotion that comes out of that.
I liked Monkey. And then shortly after, so they're trying to find the armor, right? There's this quest, right? And then shortly afterwards, we're introduced to, in my opinion, was my least favorite character and the least effective character of the film, which was Beetle, voiced by none other than Matthew McConaughey. It's his first animated film, folks. Don't be so hard on him. But man, did he lack charisma and believability in his character. In my opinion. I don't know what y'all thought.
Why do you feel that way?
I mean, there's not much Matthew McConaughey can do except be Matthew McConaughey.
See, it's...
You know, it's... I was watching a Lincoln commercial by a guy, by a Samurai Beetle dude.
See, I guess
I
was too invested in the story that I did not actually recognize it was Matthew McConaughey until... there was a point midway through, you know, his scenes where I was like, is that Matthew McConaughey? And I didn't think much of it. And then in the credits, they showed his name. And I was like, yes, it was. I knew it. So, I mean, obviously, it was very obvious. But I was really invested in the story that I didn't really think about that.
I don't know, man. I tried to get into him.
I didn't feel taken out of the story by it. I felt like he and Monkey, like the conversation and the back and forth with them, I felt like that was real.
I liked that.
I loved that.
You know,
it was, I felt it was very well done and just kind of that,
you know, like, watching the banter, you know, watching Beetle and Monkey interact, you know what it reminded me of? Me and Shanna. I'm totally Beetle and she's totally Monkey. I loved it. I loved that dichotomy. And when they start flirting, I started suspecting.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get into that in a second. But I loved that Beetle was a formidable fighter. I love that he was... He had this theme of memories, right? Because it's important that he had his memories taken away from him. But he can't remember it. All he knows is that it's the Beetle clan. Oh, I'm destined to be with this boy. I must protect him. It is my quest. You know? Oh, it's like, he's kind of a goofy paternal figure. And so let's just go into that. First of all, Kubo, your mama's a monkey. I started figuring this out pretty early, that the monkey was actually the mom. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that they made that much more obvious than the dad, but I feel like because if you were already catching on to the mom, then you started to catch on to the dad. Or at least
here's my problem with how they revealed the dad to be the Beetle. Like, the character of the Beetle is so dopey and making the connection between that character and this awesome, heroic, you know, epic, legendary, dragonborn, lost father, Hanzo the samurai, it fell completely flat to me because it was this moment where it's like, you are the father, you know? And he's like, oh, I am because I'm Matthew McConaughey. You know, my favorite fruit is the mango. Oh, I drive. It's a Lincoln. Lincoln stays with you, man. It just didn't work. And then he said the cheesiest line. He's like, oh, you're my quest. You know, it's like, it's too early. You don't really know. Like, did the memories all come flooding back to him at this moment? Or was he still the dopey beetle who accepted that he was Kubo's dad because the witch said it? You know, it was just a totally flat moment for me. Am I the only person who feels like that? Am I the only person who feels
that way?
No, you're
not, because it just didn't have as big of an impact to me. Like, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's the dad. I guess that is what it is, but it wasn't this, wow, his dad, he was here the whole time. And I think it's because he was such a dopey character. You're kind of like, oh, well, I thought you were supposed to be this epic warrior.
I thought he was supposed to be Hanzo the samurai.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of lead into that in the beginning when he asks, Mom, what was he really like? Not when he was doing all this, but when he was just with us.
Oh, that's right. And then
she's like...
And then she goes off on these qualities that actually describe the beetle pretty well. When you look at it, the beetle's actually a lot like Kubo. So, okay, I can see that. Okay, I can see that. You're making the case for me.
Yeah, I mean, all of these are there. It's just how well did we catch on to them, I guess.
Well, this guy...
I felt like they...
We've got Dylan here on the YouTube chat who said that he thought the reveal of the beetle felt kind of convenient, but he didn't hate it. So, yeah, I thought it was very convenient for the plot to just be like, boom, we need to make this point. Okay, let's move on.
I kind of feel like this whole story, it's the quest story. So it feels like Wizard of Oz, like she has to go on this quest to find these slippers she has the slippers. Oh, well, that's why, because she's had it all along. You had the power all along. And it's basically the same thing. And this was actually mentioned a little earlier on the chat wing. I think Esther said it. Just basically you had these... He's on this quest to go find the armor and the shield and the sword when really he didn't need any of that. He just needed his two strings. He needed the power of family.
Power of family.
Which I thought that was cool. But, I mean, as far as the connection between the two, I didn't feel like there was much. I mean, I felt like I saw it. You know, maybe it could have been done differently, but I still liked it.
What I like about this film is that it doesn't sugarcoat the concept of tragedy. Because Kubo, in that instant, loses both of his parents again.
Yeah.
Yeah, the witch lady kills the mom and the beetle. Monkey and beetle, right? That's what happens, right?
Yeah.
And you have this constant theme of scars, you know, scars and wounds. You know, from right off the bat, Kubo loses an eye because his grandpa plucked it out. Like, good gosh. Also, this very mature and very strange theme of your own flesh and blood, like your own family being your enemy.
Yes.
Yeah. And very interesting. Well, we'll get into the Moon King. But very, very interesting. If you notice, almost everyone has a scar or some sort of external damage. Like, Kubo lost his left eye, obviously. There's the scarring over the left eye for Kubo's Kubo Bones Ma, Marowak. And Monkey has a scar under her right eye, and then the beetle has like battle damage and like scratches on his shell and stuff. And very, very interesting. And so it's interesting how Laika has never shied away from the concept of death, right?
Mm-mm.
In one movie, it even kind of makes light of it, you know, with Paranorman. But that's one thing I like about Laika. Maybe that's why it didn't quite draw a Secret Life of Pets type audience, because there were mature themes. You know, maybe some parents read the parents guide on IMDb and were like, ooh, a kid gets his eye torn out by his grandpa. I don't want to send my kids to this. And so maybe that might have contributed to it. But I really like this theme of scars. And also, like, it's interesting because it reaches out to kids who have actual physical scars or emotional scars. And that you can still be a hero. You know, you can still have a story with a wonderful ending, even though you're not complete or you don't feel complete emotionally or with your family. And so, and in the end, Kubo is all right, even though he, in the end, he leaves with less family than he had at the beginning. But he's still, you know, and of course with the ending, there's the grandpa thing and the village. Let's talk about the grandpa.
Let's.
Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes, otherwise also known as He Who Must Not Be Named. I thought I recognized the voice from somewhere in his scenes, but man, it did not sound like old Ralphie to me. Like, I'm used to his sort of Voldemort sounding voice, like he did for Prince of Egypt. I knew that was Ralph Fiennes.
No, I think he did a great job not necessarily being the traditional Ralph.
Yeah. This film even had George Takei in it.
I know.
He was the only Asian person who actually voiced a role. Anyway, so the Moon King. So weird that your grandpa is the bad guy. I can't think of another film or like another story like that. Except, I forgot who was bringing this up in the chat, but the concept of like Greek mythology, where oftentimes family members were the mortal enemies of other family members, you know?
Well, and also you think there's a lot of families out there who maybe the parent, this was a feuding family. You know, the parents were not against this. They were not for this marriage. So he was not for this marriage at all, because she's a magic and from Earth. I don't know what, but like, it's not a welcomed relationship. And it wasn't until the kids that come out of that relationship that help heal it. So, I mean, he does end up with a grandpa in the end.
Let's talk about that. Okay, epic battle. epic battle. Giant colossal serpent. You gotta do the slide underneath it and cut the belly. You gotta do it. You just gotta do it. It's mandatory. But really interesting how they resolve his character. So he becomes mortal again. Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
And he loses his memory. And this was, like, ethically, I sort of had a problem with how they handled his situation. So the village shows up and he's like, I've forgotten who I am. Like, I've forgotten my story. So they're like, oh, okay. So they write him a new story. And so they pretty much brainwash him into thinking he's the most kindest model citizen, generous man in the village, and that everyone loves him for it. He's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm a really great guy. So I guess that's what I'll do. And I'm like, it's like, I want to say that there's something wrong with it, but like, it sounds so weird to say that I have a problem with how they basically forced him to be the good guy. I love characters who were bad and turned good. Cain from Final Fantasy IV, classic, you know, and other films, you know, Ants, I don't know, Toy Story 3, I'm sure there was something like that. I don't know, there's all sorts of movies that they do that. I love characters that started out bad, but then ended up good. But this was like a character who started out bad and had no redeeming qualities and then had redemption forced upon him.
Yes.
And if you know what church I belong to, I don't necessarily like having redemption and salvation forced upon me. Am I right?
I took a whole different side of that. I saw that as kind of you always have time to rewrite your story. So I took that side, and then always the other side I took was, a lot of times people will act the way we treat them and expect of them. So if you end up talking to somebody and you treat a man, the phrase I love is, it's a quote, it says, treat a man as he is and he will be as he is, but treat a man as he could be and he will become what he should be.
All right.
And so I feel like that's something that I took from it. I was like, yeah, that's a good thing, as far as I'm treating my enemy as, you know, somebody, showing them what they could be, and then them having that choice and having that opportunity to take that road.
Okay. Okay. So they're kind of helping him to rewrite his own story.
Yeah.
I just would have liked it better if he realized the evil that he had done and changed, but he was such a nasty, irredeemable character to begin with. I kind of wish they could have just killed him. But, I mean, they killed the sisters.
They did. No problem. Easy breezy.
Let's not be sexist here. Let's kill everyone. All genders should be killed equally. But but anyway, I had a problem with that. You know, I was like, oh, the power that they hold, they could easily abuse it. But you know, that's just my personality.
So one thing we totally skipped over was this quest for the different parts of the armor and the sword and the helmet. I don't think it's necessarily super important to the story. It was just kind of a device to get Kubo to really, you know, move.
Yeah, we got to move this plot along.
Yeah, we got to move you along from point A to point B, you know, introduce you to some new people along the way.
It's the golden brick road.
Or else he would have just stayed in Kokiri Village all his life, you know. Right?
Yep.
Oh, another kind of, if you will forgive me waxing a little philosophical, and I want to get y'all's opinion, is the whole concept of what the grandpa wanted was that he didn't want to kill Kubo. He wanted him to be raised to be like him. As the mom put it, this idealistic, perfect, cold, emotionless deity, like the mom's sisters. And it's an interesting thing because it kind of reminded me of Song of the Sea, where they gave the characters the choice of making all their pain go away, but they would they lose their soul in the process, or would they become less human in the process? And so I guess we've got that kind of I wouldn't say a golden compass type vibe from it, but just like the defiance of the ideal of losing your humanity and the cost of being without heartache and without human frailty. You know, it's really interesting. It's a lot like that mythological thing where it's like you can be a god or you can enjoy something that the people in Olympus can't enjoy, which is the human experience at the expense of your immortality or something like that. You know, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm reading through the chat here and Esther brings up a good point.
Oh yeah. Read that.
Basically just saying that nobody really sees himself as the bad guy. And that's for sure. She says, I actually thought it was frightening and brilliant how the use of eyes and sight represented seeing the imperfections of the human realm. Getting another Snow Queen vibe here. Ice shards in the eye. We see taking away Kubo's sight as something awful, but the grandfather saw it as removing his flaws, i.e. his mortal shell. In some twisted way, he wanted his son to be a part of his family again, wanted Kubo to join him in the heavens. Kubo remains firmly mortal and proud of it. Join the dark side, Kubo. There's no sushi, but we have the moon. So I definitely see that is... You're wanting to validate yourself in bringing somebody over to your side when really this whole process was just as much for the Moon King as it was for Kubo.
Indeed. So, well, slow clap for Esther.
Well said.
Yes.
we have such great contribution on our
See,
chat.
The thing is that in the chat there's so really many is. Great conversations happening and I'm trying to stay focused on you guys and be really involved in this conversation while have one little eye looking over there and totally agreed with their conversation.
You're like a chameleon.
Yeah, there's just lots going on. So if you haven't been able to join us live yet, you definitely should because it's really, really great all the different conversations that are happening both, you know, on the camera and then in the chat. So you don't want to miss out.
I mean, it's really hard to pay attention to me. So, and I demand a lot of attention. So props to everyone here. If I was to kind of wrap up my feelings for the film, I would say that the opening was brilliant. The journey was very entertaining. The ending was a little abrupt, but in all, this is my favorite Laika film. It actually surpassed Coraline for me. Sorry, not sorry, but I really enjoyed it. I love where Laika is going, and I just hope that they can keep making the films that they want to make, and that their revenue keeps coming in to where they can make this happen.
Yeah,
I hope so, man. I love Laika, and I want them to be able to get so much, and I hope that this actually becomes something like. I mean, we're talking about how parents may or may not. Want their kids to watch this because of the, you know, blood and guts and flesh and flying. But like, I don't know. I guess some of these movies growing up were some of my absolute favorites. I mean, you got Secret of NIMH, which was like super dark. And then I always, for whatever reason, not sure exactly why, but I always loved The Last Unicorn. And, you know, there's just these movies out there. There's these movies out there that are just, they just make you think, and they just make you, it's just so different from what normal movies of today come out. And I mean, there's just The Secret Life of Pets is the best is the best antonym of what this movie is, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, not that I didn't like Secret Life. It was cool. But it was like, this one just had that flare, that spark that I was like, yes, something that I can sink my teeth into and think deeply on.
I love it.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Laika.
Oh, thanks. Chelsea, what did you think about the music of the film? We didn't even talk about
the music of the film. You're right. We didn't. From what I remember, I liked it. I mean, there was definitely a lot of themes in it that did a good job at grabbing you. And I felt that there was one theme toward the end that it kept coming back, and I just felt it was just really, really pretty. I'll put that in the audio version of the podcast. I definitely thought that the music was very well handled, specifically toward the end. In the beginning, I didn't get as much of a tie, but there was this one melody that caught me at the end that was replayed quite a bit, and I really liked it.
I liked all the guitar parts, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, which goes quite well really with, you know, we didn't talk a lot inside about the guitar, but that really was kind of this constant element that he had with him. So, you know, it made sense that there were this guitar theme in the background. We briefly talked about it, but the two strings, I thought that definitely was an interesting way to tie it all together.
Yeah, the two strings I felt like were it was, like I mentioned before, the Yellow Brick Road story, where she had it all on her own. And I felt like it was a nice touch. You always have the power to change your
story. Change your fate.
Change your fate. Change your stars.
So before we talk about our final thoughts and rating it, we did do a listener Twitter question, which I asked earlier today. I said, who's your favorite character from Kubo and the Two Strings and why? Frank Foster, who shout out is in the chat, said the sisters because they're cool and creepy designs.
Cool and creepy.
The fight with the monkey on the boat was my favorite scene. Lauren Rodriguez says, did you guys review that one yet? Okay, that's not a review.
That's not a character.
Rosie Sinner said, monkey and her cold yet caring personality to her incredible animation / design. Loved it a bit. Also, A+ Charlize. Kyle Bennett says, my favorite character would have to be Monkey, because of her complex relationship with the other characters. And Matt, yes, that Matt, says, spoilers, Kubo. I was so moved by him forgiving his grandfather. Ben S. says, Kubo himself, because he is yet another great Laika child lead. So very cool. So thank you guys for sending in your thoughts about who your favorite character was. Now let's wrap it up. So guys, what would you rate this film?
That's a tough one.
I'm gonna give this 4.5.
Ooh-wee.
I feel like it had enough that I was able to really dive into a lot of it, and it really kept me wanting more. I felt like there was just a lot of themes. There's a lot of just a lot that came out of this, and holy macaroni! the animation blew my mind. Every turn, I was just in awe. It was a spectacle to behold. Everyone should see it, even if they have it on mute the entire time. And you just look at the pictures, the pretty, pretty pictures, you're going to be in awe. So that's why I give it 4.5. I couldn't quite give it a 5, just because there was a couple things in there that didn't resonate at a 5 for me. But 4.5, definitely.
All right, I am going to give it It's hard. I'm teetering between 4 and 4.5. So before I get there, let me just give my thoughts. This is one of my favorite Laika films. I think it's up there. Coraline is my all-time favorite. I don't know if it surpasses Coraline or if it's just right below Coraline, but it is definitely up there. I absolutely love the story. I love the setting, this very Japanese setting. I love the design. You cannot stop talking about the animation. And the story itself was very interesting. I really liked the characters. I thought that for the most part, all the characters were very unique and complex. And so for that reason, I'm going to give it 4.25 because I can't make up my mind. So we'll just...
4.25? You can't do that.
We'll cut it in the middle, and that's what I will give this film. But I'm trying to think about replay value. Like, would this be a film that I would really like to watch again? And I just need more time with it. So definitely up there.
Let's see. What do I think? I'm going to give it a solid 4 out of 5 stars. There were some parts, like, story-wise that I thought were a little rushed or maybe not handled very well. But in all, the visuals and, like, the epic scope and all that jazz just blew my mind. And so I, from a technical standpoint, you know, y'all know that I'm a real technical guy when it comes to animation. I really enjoyed it. Story could have been a little bit better, but I thought it was great.
Excellent.
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
Upon further review, I'm going to bump it up to 4.5.
Woo!
So now let's move on to the voicemails. We had so many voicemails that we can't even contain them all.
Hi, Rotoscope Burns. I saw Kubo and the Two Strings, and I loved it. I don't know if it's my favorite Laika film, but I still really enjoy this film. I think the stop motion and the art of it is beautiful. And also it has a very strong story, and it's not afraid to go dark. I like how this film... Even though it's a kid's film, it doesn't go for this cheap, like, kind of like, all the characters are back. Like, when a character dies in this film, like, they stay dead, and it's sad, but I think it gives the film, like, a great, like, mature vibe that I think a lot of other animated films don't have. But with that being said, I don't think I liked how much they kept constantly changing the ensemble cast. I think that's maybe the reason why it's not, like, my... all-time favorite Laika film, but who knows, I'm gonna see it tomorrow again, so I might change my mind, but I still love the movie and I'm giving it 4 stars. Thanks.
Hey Rotoscopers, it's Dylan, and I just got out of Kubo and the Two Strings, and another slam dunk for Laika Studios, another movie with rich characters, rich story, and incredible stop-motion animation. I love that stop-motion animation is still coming out in 2016. I mean, especially for kids that necessarily aren't shown older stop-motion animation films. I love that we get to have different flavors and not always the squeaky clean computer animation. I thought the movie was incredible. I loved its main message as far as it seems to be dealing with death, and it's the way that you can keep your loved ones alive in your heart is telling their story and remembering their story, which is something that over the past years dealing with loss myself has been something that's really been something that I believed in and developed in myself. So I loved seeing that reflected back up on the screen. And I feel like Laika really goes challenges, especially younger moviegoers, to have fun at the movies and have fun with the animation, but also really delve into what you think and how those themes affect you and how that reflects in you and how it might reflect in you in the future. Thanks, guys.
Hi, Brother Scopers. It's Hannah again, calling in with a last-minute voicemail for my thoughts on Kubo and the Two Strings. That movie was amazing. It wasn't a perfect movie, but the visuals, the adventure. Oh, I was never a huge fan of Coraline, but Laika, my hat goes off to you for this one. There isn't anything really I hate about this movie. The characters are cool. The action is amazing. The designs are beautiful, like right out of a Japanese painting from old times. There's so much I could say in under 2 minutes, but I'm just going to say Kubo's mom is awesome. I mean, her design, her love and devotion to her son, and even the twist about her, but that I'm not going to say, oh, best $9 I spent. Well, continue being awesome. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, this is Joey from Plano, Texas. Shout out to Mason. And I decided to call in since you are doing Kubo and Two Strings. I am super excited about this movie, guys. Laika always shows up when it comes to animation, and this might seriously be the most beautiful film I have ever seen. Not even exaggerating. From the character designs to the landscapes, I don't think there is a single frame in this movie that isn't beautiful. Aside from the animation, the story is pretty good too. I really love how many animated films have approached the issue of death in a very mature way. The Book of Life was one, then Song of the Sea. Now we can add Kubo to that list. Usually in these hero stories, the gods give the hero his quest, and in the end, he is given an opportunity to join them, become a god, and become immortal. But what was so cool about this movie was they flipped it around. The gods are the evil ones. And Kubo needs to stay immortal so that he can retain his humanity. It's a pretty bold theme for any movie, not just one aimed at children. I really think that this is going to go down as a classic, guys, and I really look forward to hearing your thoughts on it. Unless you didn't like it, in which case, you're dead to me. Alright, take care, guys.
Hello, Rotoscopers. Ryan Pareto here, fresh out from watching Kubo and the Two Strings. And I just have to say, Laika is too good. They are too good. You can see in every scene how much they care about what they do. The quality infused into their medium is stellar, and I cannot seem to find the words to praise them enough. I just want as many people to see this film. So please, Roto community, go see this movie and have friends go see it as well. We as animation fans need to support this kind of film, which offers up a quality product from a new property, and not to disparage what movies are doing nowadays, because it is a business and the almighty dollar needs to be pandered to. But I looked up several movie theaters while trying to find a where Kubo was playing, and in favor of it, theaters were putting Suicide Squad in multiple theaters, which again is fine if people are going to pay for it. It's cool, but please go out and see this film. Show Laika how much we support them and how much we appreciate all the effort they lovingly place in this beautiful film. On a personal note, Laika brought me to the Rotoscopers with Paranorman, so watching this, I felt like they were playing our song. Also, there's a little spooky spooks parts in the movie. So, I mean, for younger audiences. Thank you, guys. Love you. Bye.
Hey, Rotoscopers. It's me, Tara, again. And I'm here to leave a voicemail for your Kubo and the Two Strings podcast. Yay, which the live stream actually is on my birthday. And I feel like it's your birthday gift to me. I'm so happy. I can't resist. I really love this movie. I got to go see it last Tuesday. And hands down, it's probably my favorite anime movie of the year. Knock on wood. I could change my mind. I loved everything about this movie. I loved the visuals, the plot. Okay, I didn't like the ending because it's kind of hokey. But this was just a really solid movie, and I cannot wait to hear you guys' thoughts. I'm telling you right now, though, Mason's favorite character is Beetle. It totally is. I'll see you on my birthday. Bye.
So thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. Little shout out, we finally hit 20,000 subscribers on YouTube. So thank you to everyone who has followed us and subscribed to us on our channel. That's really exciting. That is one of the many places you can find us on the internet. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, all of the places. At Rotoscopers is where you'll find us. For show notes for this episode, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com/130. That's where you can comment and leave us your review of Kubo and the Two Strings if you were not able to join us live. And then also there's also great discussion that happens on those episode posts, so go check that out. You can leave us a voicemail, which by next episode, hopefully we'll be able to get to work live. But that's at rotoscopers.com/voicemails or 406-646-6575. Our next episode is going to be a patron pick, which is An American Tale, Fievel Goes West, also known as American Tale 2. So if you want to give your thoughts on that, definitely send us voicemails ahead of time and we will make sure we can play it on the show, whether live or after the fact, it will be in there. And all the good stuff. Any last thoughts, guys?
This has been a really great, fun time for me to talk. I've enjoyed the conversation, so thank
you. Yeah, it's been a good episode. Also, happy birthday to our very own Sarah, who is like
happy birthday,
on the
Sarah.
Chat like woo-hoo. All the time and sends us...
Happy birthday.
Sends us voicemails.
Happy birthday. Very nice. So happy birthday to Sarah, and thanks to everyone who joined us live. It's very exciting to not only have, you know, our discussion, but we get to hear your discussion and your thoughts on Kubo. And from the chat, it seems most people were very generally positive on this film. I don't think I've met anyone directly who didn't really necessarily like this. So if you have not seen it and you're listening to this anyway, go see it. Go appreciate it. It's amazing. Go support Laika. And that's all I have to say. Yep. So until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. Perfect. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. See you later.
Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Bye. Keep stalling. And I will continue to stall. So,
Chelsea, sing a song or something, Chelsea.
Yay. We had Ryan ask me in the beginning, where am I? I am in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
How was the Olympics?
Oh my gosh, the Olympics were amazing. So I did have a ticket to go to the Olympics. I went to the men's soccer final where Brazil won and Neymar kicked the winning goal. And it was just like everybody went crazy. So if you've been following me on Snapchat or Instagram, I have been posting both of those. And both of them have different stuff that I end up putting on there. So you should follow me on both. But yes, the Olympics were fantastic.